you made a tongue-in-cheek comment about that you sometimes label as a conspiracy theorist, and I was just wondering how you deal with the media who might dismiss your journalism as not valid.
As not what?
Not valid, or just as conspiracy theory.
Okay, ironically, you know, most of our, most of the sources for what we report is the mainstream media. Very often the foreign press, a lot of stuff which is reported in Europe and in Pakistan and in Latin America and so on, which is never reported here, but at least it's reported. And, you know, very often, you know, things are picked up even by the British press, which are not reported here. And very often, you know, things are reported here, but just barely. Like the fact that the Colombian military under intimate Pentagon direction is carrying out ethnic cleansing in the Colombian rainforest. That got one story in the San Jose Mercury News. Nobody knows about it because it wasn't splashed on the front page of the New York Times day after day after day after day after day. You know, but in fact it was reported. So really what we do primarily, I mean occasionally we have to dig deeper. And we actually, you know, got on the horn to UNICAL and asked them questions and so on regarding these allegations that Hamid Karzai used to be a UNICAL consultant. So occasionally we do, you know, scratch a little deeper and do some primary investigations. But primarily what we're doing is secondary reportage. Primarily we are, you know, compiling and organizing and trying to get greater exposure to things which, in fact, already have been reported. And sometimes, you know, very frequently raising eyebrows when stuff has been reported wrong. Because frequently the mainstream press gets it wrong. Frequently they get it dead wrong, just factually inaccurate. So calling them out on inaccuracies or spin or omissions and sort of being media watchdogs is a lot of what we do. And I think that, you know, the way our project differs from a lot of what, you know, other commentators on the left are doing is that we're not commentators primarily. We're providing information. And, you know, the reason I don't get accused of being a conspiracy theorist that much is because we don't theorize. We present the information and let the facts speak for themselves rather than, you know, getting up on a soapbox like Michael Rupert, who's one of these internet conspiracy theorists, and saying, the U.S. bombed the World Trade Center. Or getting up on a soapbox like Ken Silverstein recently had a column. Where did it appear? In Ken Silverstein? What's that? In the UK Guardian. Getting up on a soapbox and saying, the war in Afghanistan has nothing to do with oil, and that's just a bunch of conspiracy theorizing. We're not doing either of those. We're just presenting the facts and assuming the people are intelligent enough to figure it out on their own, which is what the press is supposed to do. And, you know, it's all of this self-righteous speechifying, which I feel has really contributed to the whole marginalization and ghettoization of the left in the last 10 years or so. And the left shares a lot of responsibility for its own marginalization. Because people don't want to be harangued with a bunch of self-righteous speechifying, except for the already convinced, which is why the left is just preaching to the choir. I mean, we should assume that the job of the press is first and foremost to inform people. And that's not to say that I believe in objective journalism, because there's no such thing. You know, what you choose to report and how you choose to analyze it, and even, you know, the straightest, most factual reportage has always got some kind of spin. You know, all that represents your biases. And obviously, you know, I mean, we make no bones about our biases. We support the Zapatistas, and we're against Exxon. You know, we don't make any bones about it. And in fact, I think that, you know, the New York Times would be a lot closer to being, you know, really unbiased and fair if they were admit what their biases actually were and admit that they are an organ of corporate power. But of course, you know, they never will. Yeah?
I'm not really convinced it's a very convincing story you tell, but I'm wondering, are there any other stories going on? I mean, your story is basically one about oil. I mean, earlier today we had a session here where someone was talking about the way in which the finances is being deregulated to provide new opportunities for capitalism to make money. Or last week I was at another conference and was talking about the deregulation of the telecommunications industry, again to provide more opportunities for capitalism to make money. I mean, are there other strategic stories going on in the world besides oil? Because when you've told a story that's all about oil.
Well, yeah, there's other things going on in the world apart from oil. Somehow it all works together. I mean, it's not just about oil. It's about Islamic fundamentalism, and it's about terrorism, and it's about lots of things. But somehow, it all works together because, you know, the whole human system, as we all know, is a big interactive organic whole. So, you know, saying that it's about any one thing is misleading. That said, the global economy runs on oil. You know, it doesn't run on. There've been plenty of covert CIA actions in Central America over the decades that had to do with bananas, but the world economy doesn't run on bananas. The world economy runs on oil, and you know the big money is to be made on oil, and you know empires are made and broken on oil, and the whole you know downward spiral of ecological collapse is being fueled by the oil economy as well. And this also has to do with, you know, the distortion of science by the government and by corporate power because they don't want to admit that climate destabilization is happening. The story which we're telling is primarily about oil. I'm not saying that it's the only story by any means. But I would say that in some sense it's sort of the paradigmatic or hegemonic or whatever big fancy word you want to use. It's the big story in some way.
The next person to ask a question wanted to know how current U.S. military involvement in Colombia compares to early U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War.
Well, it is already America's next Vietnam up to, say, 1964. Is there going to be a Gulf of Tonkin incident? And they're going to send in massive numbers of U.S. troops? There's already U.S. troops fighting there. I mean, they'll deny it, but you know they'll just call them advisors. It came out, practically 20 years after the fact that, in fact, you know, these so-called advisors who had an officially non-combatant role in Nicaragua and in El Salvador in the 1980s, they were actually fighting. It came out 20 years after the fact, but it finally did come out, and I'm quite sure that they're fighting now in Colombia. Are they going to actually, you know, start drafting American kids and sending them down to the rainforest of Colombia? They want to avoid that because it got them into a whole big mess in Vietnam, and if they can use brown-skinned people to fight brown-skinned people in the third world where life is cheap, they'd much rather do that. So I think that they would like to avoid it becoming the next Vietnam in terms of, you know, quagmires. Yeah, but it's already the next Vietnam in terms of a U.S.-directed counterinsurgency war. And whether there's going to be a Gulf of Tonkin and we're going, it's actually they're going to start drafting kids, I sure hope not. But I don't dismiss the possibility completely. But they hope not too. You know, they meaning the administration and, you know, Congress and so on. They hope not too. They don't want to see that happen.
In terms of more substantial U.S. military presence and troops.
Well, how much more substantial do you want? I mean, sure. I mean, it's already, like I say, it's 1964. You know, if it gets any more substantial, it's going to be Vietnam.
Can you quantify that? There's 20,000 advisors, there's 2,000 advisors.
I'm bad with numbers. I think officially it's less than that. I think officially it's like a few hundred advisors. But that's, correct me if I'm wrong, any historians here? I think that's about the level it was at in Southeast Asia in 1964, before the Gulf of Tonkin. And, of course, many more Colombian troops are being brought up to the United States to be trained at at Fort Bragg and Fort Benning and so on. And you've got the massive military aid, you know, hundreds of helicopter gunships and so on. And instead of Agent Orange, it's glyphosate. You know, they're spraying, the U.S. is actually contracting the pilots, former Green Beret and DEA and so on pilots, to actually fly the helicopters that are spraying this shit all over the rainforest down there. And of course, you know, once again, even though there's plenty of coca which is being grown in northern Colombia, overwhelmingly the spraying is going on in southern Colombia, where the guerrillas are, and it has to do with again with draining the sea and making the zones of guerrilla control, uninhabitable, basically. Oh, another interesting fact I forgot to point out, is as long as I've got the South America map back here, is that this same region, which is being heavily militarized, this whole Amazon Basin region, stretching into the Putumayo area in Colombia, and the Oriente area in Ecuador, and this little bit of the northern Peruvian rainforest as well, precisely the region which is being targeted in the Andean Initiative for massive militarization and, in fact, ethnic cleansing, is also, if you look at the global satellite maps of which map world oil resources for the U.S. Geological Survey, this is also a massively oil-rich region. And it's being effectively exploited in Ecuador. It hasn't been effectively exploited in Colombia because it's not under control. You know, the guerrillas are extremely active there, and it's not under control. Now, northern Colombia is also part of the same basic, you know, basin of oil resources. Northern Colombia, it is being exploited by the likes of Occidental Petroleum and British Petroleum, because Northern Colombia is largely under control thanks to the paramilitaries, which are working hand in glove with the Colombian army. But this region is not under control, and that's where the big thrust of, you know, the Plan Colombia and Andean Initiative is. This is also the oil fields in Venezuela are also part of the same geological region, which is extremely oil rich. And they've been exploiting it ever since the 1930s. They've been exploiting it very effectively in Venezuela. But now perhaps it's in danger as well because of the nationalist regime of Hugo Chavez, who's now demanding that the Venezuelan government get a larger cut of the profits for social programs and redistribution and so on. So making it more imperative than ever that they continue to expand exploitation south into this region, which has been targeted for militarization. So once again, the militarization and the corporate designs follow each other. And, you know, is that a conspiracy theory? No, that's a fact. I mean, if you want to, you know, theorize that the Plan Colombia is basically, you know, whoring for Exxon and Occidental Petroleum, well, I suppose that would be a theory. But it's a fact that the area which is targeted for corporate exploitation is the same area which is being targeted for militarization. It's not a theory, it's a fact.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much the same model, too, now is going on in Indonesia.
That's right. In Indonesia, where there's this whole spate of paranoia recently about an Al-Qaeda presence in Aceh, where there is a separatist movement going on, and all sorts of human rights atrocities have been carried out by the Indonesian military. Similarly, Exxon has got their operations there. Similarly, Exxon is paying the Indonesian military to protect their oil facilities in Aceh. And similarly, the U.S. wants to resume military aid to Colombia, to Indonesia, which was expended, which was cut off due to human rights concerns under the Suharto regime. They're now talking about the Bush administration now wants to resume it. And once again, pick up the tab for Exxon of protecting their oil operations in Aceh. So it's the same model in Indonesia as well.
Where do you see FARC going? Do you think they're going to be crushed by the sea being drained and losing revenue from cocoa? Or do you see them getting more desperate?
They're not losing any revenue from cocoa. And primarily, and as I say, it's been the paramilitaries, the right-wing paramilitaries in the north of the country, which actually control the trade routes, which actually control the smuggling routes, and actually act like a cartel. The FARC traditionally has just been taxing the coca growers, providing protection, a protection racket for the coca growers, and not for the smugglers, but for the growers. Now, because this area is so thoroughly under their control, and now the new cartel is their most deadly enemy, the AUC, the paramilitaries, the FARC is beginning to get into controlling the smuggling routes as well. And the FARC is beginning to also move in this direction of becoming a cartel. But it's not nearly advanced with the FARC as it is with the AUC, with the right-wing paramilitaries. Nonetheless, you know, that is the direction that they're going. They're moving in a more sort of criminal, overtly thuggish direction and a less ideological direction. They're acting more and more like, you know, I hate to say it, they're acting more and more like so-called narco-terrorists, like an actual criminal machine which employs criminal tactics as opposed to an actual guerrilla army. Nonetheless, because the peasants in this region depend on them intimately for their actual, you know, physical survival, you know, in terms of, you know, their income from the coca leaf and protecting them from the forces which are attempting to relocate them and exterminate their economy, they've got a lot of support. You know, it's a sort of a totalitarian and cynical strategy, but it's an effective one. They do actually have a great deal of support in that region. So it's already awful bloody, and if they're really going to be crushed, it's going to get an awful lot bloodier, without a doubt. It's not going to be easy.
Do you see them making any major gains, or do you see it as going to be a standoff, spark for a long time?
I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know anything about them. Really, so.
But you know, I know that they're now beginning to. When I say acting more like terrorists, they're beginning to do, you know, more like, you know, setting off bombs in the cities and that sort of thing, like you just saw with their attacks during the inauguration, as opposed to the more, you know, traditional guerrilla tactics, the actual, you know, blowing up buildings. And, yeah.
All right, just, is it true that about 1/4 of the coming people are internal refugees?
I don't know. I can't tell you what the figure is, but in terms of a fraction, but I believe that the numerical figure is 1.5 million internally displaced people over the past 20 years. Now contrast that with the just over 500,000 who were displaced from Kosovo by the Serbs, which was, you know, rightly seen by the world as a terrible war crime, and resulted in Serbs getting bombed by NATO. I mean, there's arguably worse crimes going on by, you know, which the United States is actually planning and directing and backing and funding in Colombia.
Yeah. I belong to a community that is a sister city of San Jose de Partido, and I know that...
Where are they?
I don't know. I've got to go look at the map. Okay. I also heard that there was an effort made to construct the canal.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The Colombian canal, the Colombian
right
route.
Well.
Yeah, through the Chocó region.
That's right.
Exactly right there. Which river is that? Is that the
And that there a huge portion of indigenous people here have been displaced, primarily to make room for multinational corporations.
Right, for British Petroleum. That's right. British Petroleum is very active here, and British Petroleum has actually been implicated through intermediaries in actually funding the paramilitary groups to clear land for their oil operations. And this is also the same region where they're planning on building a Colombian canal route right here through the flatlands of this river valley west of the Andes, and this is also primarily the region of the Afro-Colombians, who have constitutional guarantees for control of their traditional lands, which are fast being eroded through this, you know, this de facto ethnic cleansing which is going on, which you hear nothing about in the press in this country. Not a word. You know, unless you subscribe to, all these Colombia solidarity type newsletters and so on, you don't know anything about it. Yeah.
Just to comment, I guess, I thought it was interesting that the celebrations for independence of East Timor were hardly over, I think. That U.S. and I can't remember who else, what people were trying to do, I think, were interested in making some deals about the oil reserves in the straits.
Sure.
Up in East Timor, oil and gas, I can't remember.
Why wouldn't they be? Sure.
But, and did you see the article in Monday's New York Times about Saudi Arabia possibly being labeled soon as a...
Monday's New York Times? Did we see that in Monday's New York Times?
Well, go on. What do you think?
Yeah, Monday's New York Times. There's an article, this report.
Well, you're talking about the controversial statements by the the RAND analyst who was contracted by the Pentagon. Right, that was reported earlier in the Washington Post.
Oh, okay.
Right, who said that that Saudi Arabia is not a reliable ally in the war on terrorism, and that the Pentagon may have to target the Saudi Arabian oil fields. And they left it very ambiguous exactly what they meant by
it. It said seizure or something.
The
like that.
Target was the word that they used.
So, sorry, we'll probably have to wrap this up, but if anybody wants to stay, maybe they'll be around for a little bit to answer questions on their own. But
thank you very much.